Welcome to the First Time Facilitator Podcast. Whether you're a first time facilitator or a seasoned pro, listen in for tips and tricks to make a bigger impact at the next workshop you deliver. And now, your host, Leanne Hughes.
G'day and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Leanne Hughes, and I'm here to help you create unpredictable workshop experiences that predictably work. Last week on the show, I chatted to Preena Shah and we discussed organizational culture. How can you create a culture when you're brought into an organization or you work internally and you've been tasked with facilitating some change? How do you do that? She shares some really practical ways of doing that, one conversation at a time. This week, it's time for a solo episode. I actually got a thank you. I've got a lot of really wonderful feedback on my last solo episode, which is all about how I structure a 60-minute virtual webinar, meeting, or workshop to delight your participants. It's a very specific topic, and it does actually sound that you're all really interested in the specifics, in specific ways of working, tools that I'm using to help you with whatever you're creating, whether it's creating webinars, meetings, projects, that sort of thing. So on that, this week's episode is again taking you backstage. And if you've been listening for a few weeks, you'll know that Yuri Shilders, who was a guest on my episode 126, we started chatting basically for that podcast in the second week of June this year. It's now mid-July and we're really close to launching a brand new program called Virtually Possible. Basically what that program is about is that everyone's saying it's virtually impossible to recreate those face-to-face experiences online, but we're here to challenge that and say, hey, what if it was actually virtually possible? So today's show is, on today's show, I'm sharing my perspective on what the process of collaborating has been like. What's it like collaborating with someone that you barely know who lives in another country? Yuri and I certainly haven't done things the traditional way, and I think that might be really useful for you to listen to, like how we're actually taking this collaboration. One example, we don't use email at all to communicate. We're not using email at all. So I'd love you to listen in, feel inspired, and maybe ask yourself, okay, who is someone out there that I could work with to tackle a specific problem? Or if you had an idea for a while, but it's you're just sort of sitting there, you haven't really taken action, it might be helpful for you to reach out to someone who can provide a bit of energy for you to bounce ideas off and work together to build up that sort of peer accountability. And it's not just me talking in this one. I'm actually sharing some sound snippets of our conversations and weaving this throughout to give you some context on the collaboration process. Yuri and I are actually also going live this week on we've called it like a 43-minute, talking about specifics, but it might be around 45, who knows. But it's a 43-minute live YouTube stream. We're sharing 5 ways to ramp up the energy in virtual meetings by being a little bit lazy. That's on this Thursday, the 23rd of July. It's 4 p.m. Australian Eastern Time, 2 p.m. if you're over in Singapore, and earlier, I think 7 or 8 a.m. if you're in Europe or Africa. If you're in the US, don't worry, register, you'll get the link. We'll send it to you afterwards as well. You can register if you'd like to see us live stream over at firsttimefacilitator.com/possible. That's firsttimefacilitator.com/possible. And of course, if you'd like to continue the conversation when the show is over, join our community of over 930 facilitators from all over the world sharing their great workshop ideas on the flip chart. You can find a link to the flip chart. It's on Facebook, as well as everything else mentioned in this show in the show notes at firsttimefacilitator.com/episode 130. All right, now onto the show. If we're buddies on LinkedIn or you're on the flip chart, you'll see that Yuri and I have already been sharing video snippets of our behind the scenes work. So just recording our Zoom calls and taking snippets and sharing that with everyone. But I thought I'd take this a little bit further, sharing how this thing even started, what I'm learning about myself and about collaboration in the process and how we're communicating and building virtually possible. So you might be wondering why I'm sharing this. First of all, some of you might be in a bit of a rut at the moment. You're not working on anything like really creative. You're stuck at in your home. You're in lockdown. You're working at your screen every day. So why not take this opportunity? If people around the world are also in lockdown, you can look at it as a bit of a silver lining on COVID and saying, hey, well, these people now have time. They may not be committing to as much corporate work as they usually do. So why not create something as part of this and meet new people and get new ideas? I've got to say, the whole collaboration process for me has been a big step for my personal development. When you actually learn a lot about yourself when you're forced to work with someone else. And that's why I'm sort of sharing and reflecting on this as well, because it's one thing for me to actually be part of this process and build something, but I think the biggest lesson here is also, hey, what's my work like? What type of people should I continue to collaborate with and partner with? What's strong? What's not working? What do I need to improve? So I think that's good. The other thing is I've been a solopreneur for 18 months now, and it's actually really nice to work with someone else and give an idea energy. You'll hear in the next sort of soundbite, I've been asked a lot, like, Leanne, are you going to run a virtual training program about virtual training? It's very meta. And I've been doing it for corporate clients. I've been helping a lot of execs, senior leaders get better at presenting online, but I hadn't actually scaled it to create a standalone program. And then I put the call out to Yuri. I was like, hey, people are asking me about this. I think you've got a good opinion on it as well. Would you like to collaborate on this? You might be on groups like the Flipchart or on LinkedIn, and you really resonate with the way, I don't know, someone's vibe or the way that they put out content. If so, there's an opportunity there. Maybe, I don't know, I'd love to see someone to listen to this and then another collaboration or something else to start as a result of going, okay, yeah, maybe it is time for me to work with someone else. So start paying attention to the people that you see on social or even maybe previous podcast guests of this show and reach out to them and ask the question. And on that, here's how our collaboration started.
Oh, well, also what I want to say is, yeah, everyone, I still get emails all the time about virtual training and facilitation. Like, people want more. I did the first time facilitator bootcamp a few months ago. That was really fun. So now I'm thinking of pivoting and doing like a first time virtual facilitator bootcamp. It's really tricky to say, but sing out and you can say no straight away. If you want to work with me on that, partner with me on it. I'm sure you'll just tell me no if you're not interested, but if you want to talk more about it, I've got some ideas on what that would look like. The only reason I'm suggesting it is because I keep getting all these people asking me about it. I could do it, but I prefer, after my experience last Friday, I like working with other people. Yeah, so let me know.
Yeah, cool. I'd love to. Yes, I'd love to partner up. I love how you, a friend of mine does that. A friend of mine will go, hey, I've got a question, but you know, if you don't want to do it, just let me know now, because you know, it might not be your thing, and if you're really busy, I completely understand. So if you want to say no, that's fine. Just ask. I think that'd be fun. First time virtual facilitator bootcamp. It is hard to say. First time virtual facilitator bootcamp. Welcome to the first time virtual facilitator bootcamp. Something like that. Yeah, be fun. I've run lots of bootcamps in the past around innovation, but as always, I have a whole bunch of format ideas and structural ideas which I think could be fun and also very useful with a level of practicality. And I'm sure your brain is buzzing with ideas as well. So yes, I love collaborations. I think it's cool. I always think it's cool when you see Puma times, you know, Big Sean or like brands working together. I always think that's cool. Could be something like that.
Yeah. First time virtual facilitator bootcamp. We needed something better. Now, the good news is when you collaborate with someone, you don't have to have all the ideas. So this is what else I received on a voice note.
Thank you for sending to the document. I added some titles. I got a bit of a quick creative spat. Let's use the word virtually. You know, he says virtually impossible or virtually impossible. Why don't we just call it virtually possible? Something in there. I like it.
I liked it too. So then it became official. There was no more first time virtual facilitator bootcamp. It is now virtually possible. So I just wanted to share that as an example on how you can start a collaboration. It's that easy. I love when I interviewed Michael Bungay Stainer. I think I mentioned him in every episode, Obsessed. But in the conversation, he said, the only barrier to becoming a coach at the moment is by actually saying, I am a coach. There's no real barrier to entry. And same as this example, the only barrier for entry for you having a collaboration is, number one, having an idea or thinking about a problem that you really want to solve. I don't even just start with a problem. And number two, thinking about who would be great at helping you solve that problem. And number three is simply asking them. And it doesn't have to be an email. As you just heard, it was a voice note. Just ask them. Let's talk about point number two, though. Who should you ask? I'll share why I asked Yuri for this. Now, it probably was quite topical because we just spoke on the podcast last month. We're similar, but we're also different. It's like that thing in Thailand, same, same, but different. So he's got skills in video. I've talked about his YouTube channel, The Magic Source. Check it out. Link to that in the show notes. And around innovation as well. This year, I really wanted to build up my video skills, but that's not why I asked him. I think it was more a case of a collaboration being a 1+1=3 effort, not a 1+1=2. What does that mean? Yuri talks a lot about street fighting and sparring, finding a fighting partner. And I think it's also really important to actually select someone that is better at you at certain things, someone that can push you and that's not comfortable playing at a certain level. Now, I'll take this into a sporting analogy. When I play golf with people that are really great golfers, for some reason, my golf game actually picks up a lot. Like I take these shots that I never knew I could hit. I just play amazingly because I'm just surrounded by people that are doing or playing golf really well. Same in tennis. If I'm playing tennis against someone that's not very good, my game also seems to drop as well. I keep hitting the net. Whereas if I'm playing someone that's really good, my game improves as well. I think the same thing goes for collaboration. So don't be afraid to reach out to someone that's better at you at certain things, that's someone that will challenge you. And just from a conversation with Yuri, I know that he's a guy that you could have open conversations with. He has an audience. He's done this YouTube thing for a few years. We're on the same path, but he's better at something else than me. And I've got complementary skills in other areas. Pick someone that's going to push you. So 1+1=3. The other thing about collaboration as well, you don't really know what's going to happen. It's like recruitment, right? We spend all this time recruiting people into our organizations. They say the right things in interviews. They score really well on the assessments. The culture fit seems to be right. But you know that after sometimes a few months, you realize, oh gosh, this person really isn't who they were meant to be. I think that Yuri and I have lucked out. That's my personal opinion. I think with the way that we communicate has actually enabled a lot of momentum and growth as part of this. Things haven't soured yet, watch this space, but I think we've lucked out with this partnership. So you've got to actually have a bit of trust and know that it's actually really tricky to know. So what do you do then? Well, with your collaboration, try work on a project together. That's it, just a simple project. We're just working with Virtually Possible. If it works out, who knows where it will go. If it doesn't, well, we've learned a lesson. We've learned a lot about ourselves in that process. So yeah, I think commit to an experiment, a project, something with like a finite date, and reassess after that, see how it goes. Okay, so you've asked someone, you've now got commitment and you're going to collaborate on something. What do you do then, or what should you do then? A couple of things I'd suggest that we also have done is establishing communication caveats. We both sort of actually told each other what we were not very great at or comments that have been given to us as feedback in the past. And actually ours are both the same. We've been both told that we move really quickly, which I think is a strength. It can be overused, and I did overuse it actually in our collaboration, but which I'll share a little bit later on. So maybe you sort of being open and sharing, look, this is where I can get stuck sometimes, or this is where you might find me annoying you, and being really open with that. And also saying, if at any time I'm not pulling my weight, or I'm bugging you, or you're bugging me, you're moving too fast, or we're not, whatever, just let us know and we won't take it personally. We're trying to build something amazing, a really great project here together. And as part of that, we both need to communicate honestly and transparently. So communication caveats are great, as well as owning what your weaknesses are, as well as your strengths. I mean, I'm really all about the strengths, but it is helpful to know where we think improvements can be made. And that's why you go into a collaboration, so someone can point that out or also suggest maybe a system or a tool or a process to keep things moving along. So we both agreed on upfront to be transparent and share the process of building this, which is what I'm doing in this podcast and those videos that you've seen. We spoke about working fast to build momentum. We didn't want to commit to something that was going to take like 10 months to create. None of us, we don't have time for that. It's not about getting it perfect. It's about getting it shipped and getting something that meets the market. We know that we're also working on a really tricky problem. Recreating in-person experiences online, that's not an easy thing to do. And so we agreed to this philosophy of co-creating it with people around the world who are equally, if not more passionate about working through it too. And the people we want to work with and be part of the Virtually Possible program are people that also share the same philosophies around being open, being transparent, not hiding, recognizing that collaboration trumps competition. So we're not after people that just want to get their great ideas and hold them to themselves. We want to actually really share this stuff openly. We also committed to finding out what people wanted before we built it. I think we all have in our minds when we build something an idea of what the participant or audience member wants, but it's actually really helpful to just ask them. And of course, we also agreed to not using email. So I'll share how we communicate as well. You might be thinking, how on earth are they communicating? So the number one tool that we're using is WhatsApp. It's a free tool, WhatsApp. I used it with my team in Indonesia when I worked internally. It's the best. You can share voice notes, you can share video notes, Loom videos, links, you can share files, screenshots, images. I think the best part about using WhatsApp is that it's a short form tool. What do I mean by that? When you're writing an email, there's all these sort of email etiquette things that come up and you've got to respond in a certain way. And if someone writes you a long email, you got to write them a long email back if you've been kind of wanting to cater to their communication style. But WhatsApp, it's all short, sharp. You can get an answer, like add a question and there's like yes or no. It's instant messaging. So it's short form media, which makes it easier to work really quickly. The second tool we use is Dropbox. Yuri is better at this than I am, so he actually set up a filing system straight away on Dropbox. I didn't even think about that. We've got four different folders in there, business stuff, design, landing page, and videos. So all our Zoom calls and the videos that we record for Instagram stories and in portrait mode, they're all uploaded into those folders, which is really great. Keeps everything organized in a nice central location. So WhatsApp, Dropbox. Number three, we've been using, of course, Zoom for video calls. We'll record these calls and Yuri will extract like 4 or 5 minutes out, add it into a really beaut looking Virtually Possible template, and then we'll upload it to social media. Now in this episode, later on, I've included some outtakes from this. A lot of people go, oh my gosh, Leanne, you're so confident. Guess what? You get to hear that I'm not. Before we hit record, I'm like freaking out. So you only get to hear some of the edited footage, but I'm going to share, again, be transparent and share with you how I think and feel before and after these videos are shot. We also did some sprint sessions last week on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to really build the program. And I'll share how we facilitated those specific sessions very shortly in this episode. It's funny, when I became a solopreneur, I said, wow, every single day I'm having to learn a lot about myself. Becoming self-employed is the best form of personal and professional development. You're learning all the time. I would say the second best thing to learning is getting into a collaboration. I have learned a lot about myself by having someone else being a part of this process. Now, one of my strengths, the Gallup Clifton Strengths Tool, is one of my favorite. My number one strength is ideation. Here's what it says about me in my report. It's very likely that you generate ideas quickly. You present others with numerous options at a pace some find dizzying. Think through your ideas before you communicate them. Not everyone will be able to connect the dots of an interesting but incomplete idea and might dismiss it. So my blind spot is this. Your limitless thoughts and ideas can sometimes overwhelm and confuse people. Consider refining your ideas and sharing only the best so others won't reject them simply because they cannot follow your abstract thinking. Now, the great thing about working with Yuri is I don't know what his top five strengths are. I think one of his was Woo, which is winning over others. That's all about talking to strangers. Now, that for me is in my bottom 30. The thing with Yuri, though, is that I don't need to connect the dots for him. He gets it. I don't need to think through them and articulate them clearly. He can grab them and make them real. So that's been a real win out of this collaboration. I think the other thing is, like I said, we both move really quickly. Now, last Thursday, I had to send out an email to everyone on the waiting list. And I was like, I've got to get it out on Thursday because no one reads their emails on Friday. So I was putting a lot of pressure on myself. Wednesday evening, I think it was like 10:30 p.m., I drafted the email, sent it over to Yuri, go, can you proofread this by tomorrow morning? I gave him like 8 hours to do that. I hadn't heard a response, so I just sent it out. Anyway, then he gave me feedback after, which was really good. He'd actually had a friend, Mark, have a look at it and provide some thoughts. And I was like, I really should have waited for that feedback. So I've learned a few things. I mean, I do move quickly, but I also need to respect other people's time and commitments as well. So I owned it, and it probably comes back to just project management and going, look, if I'm sending an email on Thursday, get it to Yuri Wednesday morning, just 24 hours. We've agreed to that in terms of providing feedback to each other. Now, he didn't have to give me that feedback. I picked it up myself and owned it. The other strategy when it comes to this collaboration is, like I said, we're sharing behind the scenes and being really transparent. Now, this is good because it gives us public accountability. Now we're more accountable, not only to each other, but to everyone else that signed up for the waitlist and people that are interested. So that's really good. If you need any type of motivation to get your work into gear, put it out there to the world and you'll get your gears spinning. So last week is where we did the main bulk of work. Now, up to this point, we chatted, we got a name, we saved our Zoom calls, we collected all of your pain points from the conversations we had with you on LinkedIn, Facebook, or through email. So if you are one of those people that's commented or emailed, sent through a message about this program and sharing your headaches about virtual facilitation, thank you. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. It provides us with really good direction. We've actually uploaded all of your thoughts. We're in the process of doing that actually because they keep coming through. There's a lot of headaches when it comes to this question. You can check that out at firsttimefacilitator.com/VP tips. That's .com/VP tips. That link was only sent out to people on the waiting list, but if you got this far in the podcast, I'm going to let you know where that is. You can actually view what other people have written and what they've shared. So I actually got my virtual assistant, Gracie, to collect all of them, forward them all through to her, and she popped them on the Excel spreadsheet. So prior to meeting on Monday, we had this spreadsheet full of pain points. We had a few other ideas, and it was my job to facilitate Monday's session. That was Yuri's call. So he's like, I would love you to facilitate Monday to someone. And that's what I found really interesting, actually. We're two people working together, yet you still need a facilitator. Because if we were both going to hop on, no one's got the accountability of getting the outcomes or creating a structure. So he created, that was my role for Monday. He facilitated on Wednesday. So I set Monday up. It was 11 a.m. to 12:45 p.m. for the first sprint, 1:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. for the second sprint, 6 p.m. for 6:45 for a quick recap. I created a Google Sheet, and there are so many different tabs on this one. Let me have a look at what is on there. Got questions like, so one tab says, what questions do we have, to do, pain points, dates, marketing launch sequence, webinar, sales page, software tech. Those are all the tabs that we've got on this thing at the moment. We're working off this one Google Sheet. So the first thing we did in session one on Monday was really focus on the process of how are we going to make this thing happen? Like, how are we going to bring this virtually possible program to the world? I put a timer on for 25 minutes and it was a quick brainstorm dump. Yeah, that's it. Question dump. The question I had was this. What questions do we have that we need to get answered to get this thing out into the world? Notice that I didn't say, what do we need to do? I said, what questions do we have to answer to make this thing happen? And that was really fun. We just had a couple of columns and we brainstormed. So questions were like, okay, what are the activities we need to do around the launch? Who else is doing this already? If we did a live launch once or twice a year, what would that look like? How do we get a 100% completion rate for this program? How do we communicate with participants? Where do we host the program? What's our time frame on delivering this? How can we make signing up as easy as possible? There's like three times as many questions. I won't talk you all through them, but that was a really great way of just going, okay, what do we actually need to do to make this thing happen? And then prioritize the key questions we needed to answer on Monday. So after prioritizing that list, and actually we allocated, so Yuri had a column to work on, I had a column of questions to work on. The second thing we did on that Monday, that first session, was actually look at all the headaches that you have with running these virtual workshops. And then we ended up categorizing them into chunks. We're going to call these something different, but the common problems were around engagement. So how you actually facilitate engagement, get people interacting with your presentations, turning their cameras on, all of that. Mindset, your mindset as well. How can we reframe it so we actually look at this as an amazing opportunity rather than, oh, I just want to be back to face-to-face. I want to be back in the old world and doing what I did. How do we move forward? And the third one was tech. So, you know, what are the different systems and tools like this, the lighting, the sound, the programs? That's what came out from you, those three major themes. Like I said, we're working on a cool framework around that. So Then we split the roles and we talked about playing to our strengths. So Yuri's, his strength is all about the content on this, metaphors and frameworks. That's where he really thrives. He talks in metaphors. So how can we communicate this and solve the problem, co-creating it with you, but also using metaphors to explain our solution. Meanwhile, I'd focused on dates, on how we're going to launch it, what the webinar would look like, and the marketing efforts to support this. So then we worked individually, separately, came back. Now, I think spacing is really important. It's funny, we had a lot of discussion, and then often it was when I was switched off, not actively working on this, like going out for a walk, when a great idea would hit me. So you've got to switch your brain off. I know it's so counterintuitive, but you do need to give yourself that space to arrive at the answer sometimes. So each time block, we'd sort of arrive back, reflect on anything, ask questions to help clarify what we needed to work on. On the second session, I introduced an app. It's called Time Blocks, timeblocks.co. So cool. If you want to run these sprints or run co-working brainstorming sessions, I completely recommend it. So we set what we were going to, our intention of what we were going to work on. I put the 25-minute timer on. So shared my screen within Zoom. We both turned off our camera and audio and got to work. Came back after 25 minutes and shared what we did. And it was absolutely incredible what we achieved in 25 minutes. Like unbelievable. Yuri got his framework together. I figured out dates, launch sequence, webinar strategy. And then also reflected on what we needed answered again. In the final 45 minutes, that went really quickly, just a recap, talking about what we went through, celebrating what we'd achieved that day, and then arranging the next meeting time and what we'd do in between then. Of course, we switched roles. So Yuri facilitated the second session and it was his job to think of the timing and send the calendar appointments, just keeping it a 50-50 split in terms of that workload. Okay, so Yuri sent me the times for Wednesday and we were running 2x43-minute sessions. We had a joke about running a 43-minute webinar. So we met on Wednesday, did a check-in again, talked about what we'd be working on. And then the second one, the progress made between each of those, the space between those two sessions was absolutely amazing. And we decided in that space time, that off time, I decided, look, for some reason, I'm not feeling really energized about running another Zoom webinar. Like I'm hopping on Zoom all the time. So why not run a live stream into YouTube? Yuri's a YouTube guy. Anyway, he's up for it. So we agreed to meet on Friday and test the technology. We're using a tool called B.live, which does really cool things. You can annotate over the top. You can share people's comments from YouTube chat in there. We're figuring it out. And we had a trial run on Friday to do that. So that's probably the big thing we're working on now is getting everything ready for Thursday's live stream, Thursday, 23rd of July. If you'd like to join us live and see like how we actually brought this together, please do. You can find out all the details at firsttimefacilitator.com/possible. Okay. Now, it was funny when we tested the tech on Friday. Oh my gosh. Videos weren't working. Sound wasn't working. Chat annotation wasn't working. So I was freaking out going, why did I think of YouTube Live? But we figured it out. So we actually trialed for a bit. Things weren't working. We hung up the call, went on to Google, figured it out, hopped back in, and it worked. Amazing. So it just shows you how important it is to practice, do that work behind the scenes before you go live with any type of tool. And even saying that, there is every chance it may not work on Thursday. So we're going to put a plan B in, plan B Zoom link that you can join if things aren't working at a certain time. So that will all be in the email registration. And it's probably a tip for you if you're running something live, provide either a backup Zoom room or another piece of tech so people know where to go if option one decides not to work. Hopefully you don't have to use it. It's just an insurance policy. Okay, that's it from me for this episode sharing. I hope you found something in there useful. Again, it was really quite detail-oriented, sharing specific questions and tools and how we're actually working our communication protocol. Let us know what you think. Connect up on LinkedIn, shoot me on Instagram, DM at Leanne Hughes, or connect with Yuri. Links to all that will be in the show notes. And I'll leave you with some more behind-the-scenes conversations that we've had to develop this thing. Hope you enjoy it.
All right. So let's just do a dry run. It doesn't really matter that much. Just a minute, which we're going to put on LinkedIn, I think, and on other platforms. So I'm going to look into the lens because that helps.
Okay, I'll look into
it's a lot better
as well.
Well, hello there, people of the internet. My name is Yuri, and I'm chatting here with Leanne because Leanne and I are working on something really, really exciting that is called Virtually Possible. Because what we want to do is give people the confidence, the skills, and the tools to take the live interactions, the interactive facilitation workshops and meetings, and do that online. And we think there's a lot of potential, and that's why we are really excited to put something together. But really, it came from Leanne, so rather than me telling you. Leanne, tell a bit more about yourself, and where did this come from? Why are we doing this?
I think it's because it's a common pain point. So many people are coming to me, whether it's through like a LinkedIn message or just through conversation, and saying, I really, really miss that feeling of being in a face-to-face environment. Yeah. And I wish we could replicate it online. And it's like, I've actually been in conversations, even a podcast conversation I had with you, where I'm actually feeling the energy. I'm getting energized from Zoom. So I think there's absolutely a way we can do it. And I think we've got to stop sort of protecting and saying we can't do it and go on with that attitude that everything is virtually possible.
Absolutely. And, you know, and we don't have all the answers yet, do we? I mean, we're exploring as much, but we're just talking to the right people and picking information from left to right, building this with a community. Mm-hmm. We've never worked together. We're fairly new friends. So this is really exciting. And I think what we also wanted to show you out there is that with this whole internet thing and people working virtually, you find opportunities to work with other people, right? And to connect with other people, because that's how you broaden your horizons and your world.
Absolutely. I think we've been friends for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
It just shows you.
We still like each other.
Yeah, that's right. But I think that's exactly right. I think we're all looking at the limitations. When people tell me, oh, I'm so frustrated, they're all looking at the limitations. It's like, hang on, there's some opportunity here. You can now go borderless. You can present at any time zone. The collaborations open up. And I'm hoping that we can role model that as part of this as well.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what we're going to be doing. So if you're watching this and you've watched this far, thank you for watching so far. Check out Virtually Possible. We'll leave a link in the comments below. You can either sign up for it, which we would like if this is something that's interesting for you, or leave your comments. Like, what are your biggest pain points when it comes to virtual facilitation?
Let us know.
Anything to add, Leanne, while we're just riffing this?
No, I think you nailed it.
Well, we'll catch you next time then. See ya. Well, good. Did that make you nervous?
Yeah, I think it's because of like the constraints of a minute. Like if with a podcast, you've got so much time to get into it and just talk. But with a minute, you're like, I've got to get all the goodness. I've got to be really succinct. And, you know, then of course, like, and we put pressure on ourselves of being amazing and saying the right thing. So I think it was fine.
I think it's absolutely fine. And like I said, what I think what I wanted to show is like spontaneity. We landed the idea. We said why we're doing this. We're role modeling this kind of build to order kind of thing. Mm-mm. And we're showing this whole go hang out with different people and see what you can do together. So I think that is very happy with that. So you lead. I'm here. I'm ready.
You can edit this, right?
Of course I can edit this. But I don't want to edit it. I like us being spontaneous. You are so good when you're spontaneous. Oh, like everybody else, once you start thinking about it, then you go like, is this all right?
I know.
Everybody has that.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, let's go.
Hi, everybody. Just so you know, Leanne does not need any intro.
Okay. G'day, everyone. It is week 2 and I'm brainstorming with Yuri. We have put some information out there about what we're creating, a program called Virtually Possible. And we've asked you to comment and let us know what your pain points are with taking something that's in person and moving it online, moving it virtual. We've had a lot of you reach out with really, really impressive pain points, and I feel you. And Yuri, as I was reading all those comments that came through, I was actually thinking, oh my gosh, like, are we actually over promising something here with this program? Are we in over our heads? What do you have to say to that?
We don't know. It's possible. See, get it? It's virtually possible.
Got it.
See what I did there? Maybe it is. We don't know. We have to explore. What we were just talking about before was there's a lot of space for improvement left and right, and there's so many options, but it will require a reframing of thinking. So we need to think about these things in a very, very different way. And once you do that, just my experience is once you reframe something, you're going to see opportunities and connections which you didn't see before. So I believe there's a lot available. I don't think we're going to solve the internet problem. If people have a spotty internet connection, we're not going to solve that. But there's so much more available, and I think the bar in some cases is quite low. So there's a lot we can do. We're not saying that it's the perfect answer, but we can really shake this up. Really, really shake this up. What do you think?
Completely. Yeah, I really agree. I think there's some fundamental principles that apply that people still aren't using in basic face-to-face workshop environments that would work really effectively. And it's not huge revolutionary changes. I think it's really quite simple things that you can do. And I think that's what we all want, right? We don't want to have to like learn a new system and learn how to tech DJ and have like five browsers open. I think we just want to know what's a really simple way that I can be engaging and effective. And it's good you brought up that point actually around, because it seems like, and even when we've talked about this, I'm like, oh gosh, everyone is bringing out a workshop on virtual facilitation. Is it oversaturated? Like, is this the right thing for us to do? Is it the right time? Yuri, tell me, what do you think?
That's a good question there, Leanne. Let me ask you this question then. How many, you're in Brisbane, how many Italian restaurants are in your neighborhood or in your city? Guess.
I mean, there'd be dozens.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Yeah. I see the same thing here. Because there are other players there, it's not a bad thing. Yeah, I know people who have a product or are building a product, which is awesome. Why not? I don't think we need one solution. I think we need a variety so we get contrast, we can learn from each other. And I don't think there's one answer. So maybe it is saturated, but the reality is like with any kind of development, most of them will move away from it. They'll lose interest. There's a lot of people out there who are just jumping on it because it's popular. But those are also the people who last year went to cryptocurrency, then they went to Bitcoin, then they were an expert on leadership, then they went to digital marketing. Those people lose interest anyway. So I'm not too worried about them. There is still a really, really big need for it. And I don't think it's the technicalities and the gimmickiness. That's not a word, but yeah.
We can make a word. You can just buy the domain name and just buy the domain name.
Gimmickinness.com. So you're watching this.
We've got to pause this recording while Yuri goes to GoDaddy.com. But it's an interesting point about oversaturation, because you could say that everyone's running these programs, yet at the same time, from a participant and a viewer perspective, I'm still getting on webinars that aren't engaging and aren't interactive. And a lot of people agree with me there. So I think there's still a lot of work to be done in this space.
Absolutely. I think it's with videos, because I create lots of videos, right? I can have the best video, but if I don't engage my audience in the first 7 seconds, people click away. If my thumbnail doesn't entice people, people click away. It doesn't matter how good my video is. Mm-hmm. Some of those principles apply here as well. Because you don't have people in physical space, basically you can hold them. When you're in a meeting room and they've paid for something, you kind of have them hostage. They can't really leave. Yeah. Now people can. They might sit there and nod, but they probably have another window going on over here. So it's very easy to lose people. So that's a challenge for you then. You know, how do you keep these people involved? Energizer could be one, but I don't think it's just that. It's having better conversations and doing that in a way where the distance and where the screen and the technology does not become a hurdle. You know, make that easy. The answer isn't technology. The answer is how we use it, I think.
Love that. Yeah. I totally agree. One thing I also want to explore this program is our own energy. So I've been on calls and I'm looking at the little postage stamp people on my screen, like the little Harry Potter kind of, you know, when Harry Potter, they like the profile image just moves around and you think, are they even listening? They look like they're tapping out. And as a result, I'm giving myself that feedback and I'm draining my own energy without actually getting any type of buy-in or reinforcement on that. I mean, they could be paying attention. We have this real negative bias, I think, as facilitators. It plays out even more when we go virtual. What are your tips? You produce YouTube videos every week and it's just you in a room talking to a camera. How do you bring your own energy to that?
Well, I always picture people there. Every time I create a video, I'm thinking of somebody or a group of people I'm talking to. So that makes it really interesting. Two, you just learn to be a lot more engaging, because I know by being engaging on camera, you draw in people more. That's just the way it is. I mean, if I'm just a talking head speaking in a certain monotonous way, that's not going to fly. You already see very little of my body. So just by moving a bit more, by doing different shots, I can engage people more. And the other thinking is, I don't think as facilitators, we have to always take all the responsibility for keeping people involved and engaged. We're not dealing with kids. No, I hate that when people say that, like I'm not here to entertain you. I do my best as a facilitator, and the people I work with as well do our best to make sure it's engaging, that we get you from A to B, we get you through problems, we have better conversations, we create a safe environment. But it's teamwork. And hey, you know what? At the end of the day, if you want to sit there and don't engage, that's your call. There's nothing I can really do about it. I can make it as interesting as possible, but I don't think it's just my responsibility. If you don't want to play along, it's on you, not me. Sorry.
Thank you. I love that. Maybe we should.
What do you think about that then? What's your thinking on that?
Yeah, I did a big post on LinkedIn about that a couple of months ago because everyone was talking about the facilitator's responsibility. And I was like, hang on, it's a partnership. Like, you've got to bring something and you've got to bring yourself and your game and show up as well. So I definitely think there's accountability there. Yep. Maybe we create like a Zoom manifesto or like rules of engagement. I don't know.
I start with that. I start with the conversation around this is teamwork. So I used to do this. I still do this in talks. Like big audience talks, and you know, you're on stage and it's always a bit scary and everybody's kind of sitting there like, you know, who's this guy? And I've done this for 10 years. I always do this. I start off by saying, so my name's this, I'll be talking about that, or a little story. And I go, just so you know, this is an interactive session. I brought a little interaction bell. So I always bring this one. So every now and then I'll ask a question, I'll hit the bell and I'd like you to respond. Cause if you don't, then I'll just get all flustered and I get nervous. Then I pee on myself and nobody wants to see that. So, and I make him laugh. That's all it is. You just make him laugh and you play on that card a bit later on. Go like, guys, you don't want to get, you know, embarrass myself again. So just, it's having a laugh and kind of going, whenever I ring this bell, it's interactive. And it works like a charm because I don't take myself that seriously, nor should anybody else take me seriously at all. But it creates a light environment and it signals, the serious note is it signals that I can't do this by myself. You're in this with me. So either come along or don't waste your time.
Yeah. And the second we had that mindset of it's not all about us and we have to deliver the goods, I think that's something really powerful that we need to sort of talk more about and how we manage that. And I think cool tools like just simple, you know, simple phrases like that and a ringing bell can really make a difference. And it's not learning another piece of software. So Yuri, I'm excited to be working on this with you and just continue talking about the problems and what we're seeing, pain points. If you're interested in knowing more about this, click the link below to find out more and get on the wait list. We'll send you through more information and also comment and just share. What are you noticing? Are things getting better for your webinars or worse? What's happening for you?
Or have you seen any good examples? If you go, hey, you guys really should check these guys out or you should check out that idea or this channel, let us know.
Thanks, everyone.
Okay. Shall we wave? People wave, right?
We do. Bye. Bye.
Bye. Jazz hands.
Yeah, spirit fingers. Yeah.
Engagement. What can we learn from YouTubers, TikTokers, Twitchers? What can we learn from them, do you think, for what we're trying to do?
I think you alluded to the other week in terms of grabbing attention in the first, you said 7 seconds. On TikTok, it's actually a lot shorter than that. So it's all about curiosity. It's like 2 or 3 seconds you're going through. So something's got to happen that leaves you kind of hanging and wanting to watch more. It could be they throw out a question or I think it's called a pattern interrupter. Think about anyone just scrolling the feed. Something's got to grab your attention. So it's got to be something a little bit different you're not expecting. That's actually how I start my face-to-face workshops is with that same kind of, I talk about unpredictability to get attention. Yeah. So how can we be more predictable in our virtual workshops?
And what do you do in your physical workshops then to create a bit of that surprise? Like, what do you do? Like, does an alarm go off when you start? What happens?
No. Well, I just think about what everyone else does. So think of a typical workshop. Everyone comes in, grabs a cup of tea or coffee, sits down. They wait. The facilitator's usually like getting their slides ready, putting up flip charts. Then when it's time, they'll walk up the front of the room and start and talk about themselves for a bit. Okay, so I something even simple is while everyone's coming in, have a chat to them, start from the back of the room, don't even have slideshows on, start with the problem, like the reason you're here is, or don't you hate it when?
Yeah.
Create that, get everyone standing, talking, and then do the introduction after that. So it's not tricky, it's just like, what is everyone doing? So on webinars, I think it's the same kind of framework. We all wait for people to arrive, but sharing a screen, and then we just kick off talking person to slideshow.
It's kind of hilarious that so many people say, oh, you know, my meetings are not interesting or my webinars are this, but you keep doing the same things.
And I heard a really interesting observation about Zoom yesterday, actually. Mm. So when we all log into Zoom, we're all expecting the same thing. It's like, you know, when you go to a workshop in a different environment, it sets a different tone. So if you're at a workshop by the beach, you kind of feel a bit more relaxed. If it's an evening event, you go into that with a different mindset. But it seems like with Zoom, we're all approaching it with this like, oh gosh, another Zoom call. We're in the same room, we're in the same environment, but how can we create, I don't know, a little bit of difference? And I've heard cool things like people are sending out physical items before calls. So I had some execs were having a like strategy session, and they all got sent their favorite bottle of alcohol that they had to unpackage on the call. I was going to say that's simple, but it actually takes a lot of effort to do that.
Yeah, no, I get that. But if you're looking at purely from a price point of view, time is the only resource you have, really. We all have 24 hours and it's how you spend it. Now, if you take a bunch of really expensive execs or whoever in the business and you take them out of the business for half a day, if you could then use that chunk of time to really get something done, which in the long run will give them clarity, purpose, energy, strategy, that's worth it. That's worth them going the extra mile. Why would you then waste it?
I think a lot of what we can do that makes something special in facilitation is absolutely going the extra mile. Thank you so much for getting to the end of this podcast episode. You've made the end of Podcast Club, so appreciate you. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend and look forward to seeing you on our live stream on Thursday. If you're listening in real time, head on over to firsttimefacilitator.com/possible. Chat to you next week.